Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
We'll also talk with Jim Dahlke on the Wintrust Business Lunch today, the national editor at American Inno, about the tech sector. I don't know if in general he has observations about Thread versus Twitter, but the number Steve threw at us earlier this morning was that how many subscribers now to Threads?
They crossed the 100 million mark over the weekend. That's 5 days into after it went live, I guess.
Which doesn't say anything specifically about the viability of Threads. It says something about the fact that it's linked to Instagram, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's good or it's bad, whatever. It was interesting to me that one of the things that Zuckerberg has said in the last couple of days as this thing's rolled out and they're getting user feedback is, yeah, maybe we should have an edit button. And I thought, when did you guys not know? How did you not know that that was the greatest frustration with Twitter forever, or Facebook for that matter?
Been crying for that?
I'm not a web developer, but it would seem to me like that's a thing. You go, hey, Tony, write the code where they do that. And then it happens. I mean, how hard is that to anticipate? Either way, 100 million users has got enough attention that Elon Musk, is he officially suing Meta for...
No, his attorney, his longtime attorney, a fellow by the name of Alex Spiros, sent a letter to Meta asking or complaining about, let's see, what was the word? Can I find it?
He said they were stealing it was proprietary information, something along
those
lines.
Accusing the company of unlawful misappropriation of trade secrets.
Unlawful misappropriation of trade secrets. Okay. We'll see how that story goes.
Yeah. I'm thinking these are really smart people, though, and if they look, somebody at Meta looks over there and, hey, look what Twitter's done. How about we can do that?
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Is that misappropriation?
Well, besides, if you said it's a messenger, well, it's an app, and it collates different sites and then puts them in a stream for you. This is how I use it. And then you scroll through it, and you go, there's WGN's post, or there's the Chicago Tribune's post. Then you follow people, right? Sometimes the algorithm will deliver to you people or things that maybe you don't want to see or you're not enjoying. I think part of the criticism of Twitter anyway is that it's become, when you use Twitter a lot, you don't feel good. It's like eating too much candy. I feel bad now. And it's just, I think, the residual or lingering effect from Twitter. It's just a lot of hostility and negativity. And Threads is trying to carve out a different vibe, as I understand it. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, and putting some dollar signs to this, Meta shares popped last, the 5th, I guess? 5th or 6th when this thing went live. And year to date, Meta is up 141%. So they're doing okay.
I think one last observation about this, and then we'll talk more about this with Jim Dahlke later on, but just to show you how troubled Twitter is or how unpopular Elon Musk is now, people are rooting for Facebook. People are rooting for Mark Zuckerberg. I mean, you know, the guy whose algorithms were negative themselves, for crying out loud. Zuckerberg is nobody's... I don't know what the end of that sentence is, but it's weird if we're all rooting for that poor guy, but it comes at the expense of Elon Musk, and that's what that's really about. Two businesses in Chicago that are winning are ice cream shops. You probably heard a little bit about this, according to the rankings. I'm looking at who did this. This is at WGNTV.com, Yelp's annual top 100 list. The 48th best place to get ice cream in America is Lickety Split in Chicago. Love the name. And number 65 on the list is The Plush Horse in Palos Park. Rainbow Cones aren't on here. Tone's Cones aren't on here of the 100 best ice cream shops in America. If you said what's more important to a city like Chicago, downtown office occupancy or downtown hotel occupancy, which would you pick? probably office occupancy, right? Because that's 5 days a week.
That's who I'd go with.
Yeah. Although, you know, tourism does tell you something about the vibrancy and attractiveness of a city. So if folks are coming into town for trade shows or for vacation, they got to stay somewhere. They stay in your hotels. I guess I say all of that to say this. We have divergent statistics here. Like the rest of the world, this from ChicagoBusiness.com, downtown Chicago office landlords got to celebrate the end of COVID-19 during the second quarter of 2023. But the fallout they face from the pandemic is getting worse. Office vacancy rate in the Central Business District midway through the year inched up to 22.6%. That's the vacancy rate in Chicago. 22.6, that's an all-time high from 22.4 3 months earlier, according to data from real estate services firm CBRE. The new share of available space is up from 21.2 a year ago and 13.8 when the public health crisis began. The vacancy rate has hit a new record high in 9 of the past 12 quarters. And if you look at Chicago compared to other cities, in which cities would you guess also are doing badly? Would you put San Francisco on that list?
Yep.
Your big three are San Francisco, Los Angeles, but Chicago tops them all. And by the way, below that is Beijing, Shanghai, Washington, D.C., New York, Hong Kong, Boston, Madrid. The office vacancy rate is higher here than almost anywhere in the world.
Chicago's ahead of San Francisco?
That's what it says, 21% to 19-something. In Berlin, it's closer to 5%. Tokyo, it's under 5%. Paris, it's about 7%. So we haven't fixed that problem yet, have we? And one of the reasons that maybe people are not coming downtown is because they don't have to. They can work from home. The other thing is people have this perception that it's maybe not a safe place to come. But here's the problem with that. If you want to put that as the reason, then how do you explain this? Governor Pritzker joined the Illinois Department of Commerce today and the Economic Opportunity Office, that would be the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, elected officials and industry leaders to announce that Illinois reached its highest ever hotel revenue figures in fiscal 23. Hotel revenue for this year, $308 million, surpassing a pre-pandemic record in fiscal 19. I mean, you wouldn't figure we did that well in 20, 21, 22. 23 is better than it's ever been for hotel stays. Additionally, Illinois welcomed 111 million visitors who spent $44 billion in 2022. 14 million additional travelers spent $12 billion more than the calendar year 21. I'm proud, the governor said, to announce that in the fiscal year ending in June, Illinois saw the highest ever hotel revenue numbers. And more tourism means more visitors exploring the amazing things our state has to offer, blah, blah, blah. So folks do come down. Now, it helps when in that fiscal period, you had Taylor Swift and you had... Was NASCAR just under that? No. NASCAR'd be on the other side, wouldn't it?
But people were here already coming in at the end of the month.
And to be honest with you, I saw it again today. I mean, you know, a couple of weeks ago we were talking about the fact that there were 50,000 young ladies in Chicago for a national volleyball tournament. This morning on my walk from my car here, I saw a long line, half a block long, of young ladies and their moms and dads and coaches all wearing basketball clothes, getting ready to go to some must-be national basketball tournament. There were uniforms from Minnesota and other states, and the girls were all standing there waiting for the bus to take them to wherever the venue is. I'm going to guess it's McCormick Place. But, you know, many thousands of people come into the city, especially in the summer, obviously. And my take on it Friday when I left, well, no, it was Thursday. I walked over down Michigan Avenue to the bank. Because I'm still old school and I like to go into bank buildings and say, hello, banker, I have a check for you. Would you give me money for it? She said, you know, you can do it on the machine. I said, but anyway, I noticed the streets were really busy. The sidewalk was. So anyway, for the record, a record-setting year for hotel stays in the state at Peoria, Springfield, I'm not sure where else folks are staying. Mostly Chicago, let's say. But office vacancies hit a record high. And those are one very good story and one very bad story.
The concern, though, on the office vacancy that I've read about is the other shoe, if it drops, and that's loans coming due on these buildings that are being vacated, that the owners of the buildings are potentially going to be in some trouble.
Right, right. So what's the solution to that? If you're the bank, you can foreclose on that. What are you going to do now owning that building? Right? Right? It reminds me a little bit of when we had the real estate crisis and banks said, okay, you're out. We'll keep the house and we'll let weeds grow and the pipes will burst. And now we've got a depreciated asset. The point being, it would behoove them to do everything they can to even keep these owners of these buildings who maybe aren't making the payments they should. Better to have them run it than you run it. What are you going to do with that thing? Turn it into a pickleball court? Which is happening. But we don't need 68 stories of them, so I don't know what they're going to do.
Turn it into a hotel. That business seems to be doing well.
Now that you mention it, I thought you were going to mention the student debt, because I do have a study that reveals that states with the most and least student debt certainly include Illinois. What would you guess the average student debt is for an Illinois resident?
$35,000.
Yeah, $37,869.
Okay.
Puts us eight on the list. Maryland's number one at $42,000. I don't know why one state's citizens would have higher student debt than another. Maybe in Maryland, you tend to get career professionals who are working in Washington, D.C. and had to acquire a lot of education to get there. But Georgia's number two on the list, and that's $41,000. Delaware, Virginia, that goes back to my point. New York, Florida, Oregon, Illinois is number eight. Student debt, and that is on average $37,869 owed by 1.7 million people. 1.7 million people. Just one last quick note about this. I got to stop yakking here, don't I, Pete? But I was offline talking to Ray Kaplan, and the fact that the Biden administration could not get student debt forgiven doesn't mean that student debt forgiveness is gone. And Ray talks about this sometimes in general terms, because she's only on with us for a few minutes. I said, Ray, I want you to be more specific next time you come on. The amount of your income that you should have to pay on your student debt has been reduced significantly. And I don't know if everybody knows that. This isn't debt forgiveness, but what do you care as long as only a small percentage of your paycheck has to go to your debt? And that's the topic we'll address next time. By the way, as you listen to the last conversation Steve and I had about the fact that office occupancy rate is down in Chicago more than any other city in the world by one estimate, but hotel revenue is up. 847 said hotel revenue in Illinois is higher than ever because they're overcharging. The room rates are crazy high compared to before the pandemic. Another listener said, maybe it's because room rates are much higher. More revenue does not necessarily mean more tourists. That's a couple of observations from our listeners. I don't have data behind that, but I'll look into it. How is it that our occupancy rate for the offices is worst in the country, worse than San Francisco, worse than Tokyo, but our hotel revenue is through the roof? Clearly, folks are coming downtown. But maybe that doesn't reflect the hotel occupancy rate. Here's Jim Dahlke, national editor at American Inno. ChicagoInno.com is the website. Jim, you don't know much about that. Do you happen to know off the top of your head what the hotel occupancy rate is? I thought it was pretty high in Chicago.
You know, I don't, but maybe we've got Taylor Swift to thank for that. I think she set a record for hotel occupancy when she did her 3 days here in Chicago the other month. So, hey, maybe we need more Taylor Swift concerts.
If she came to our town every week, wow, would our problems be solved? Canada's parliament has issued a statement asking her to come to Canada to help their economy. I'm not making that up. They had their tongue in cheek a little bit, but they wouldn't mind it if she brought that billion-dollar show of hers there. Let's you and I talk about some of the businesses in the Chicago area. Talk about the Chicago Startup Blueprint.
Yeah, Blueprint, really interesting mental health startup in Chicago. Essentially what Blueprint is doing is providing better data to mental health therapists. Their software really, as their name implies, gives therapists a blueprint to help diagnose their patients rather than just kind of, you know, helping folks via sort of trial and error. What they really are doing is using the software to kind of gather data from patients and related to things like the symptoms and the exercises they're doing to find out what works and what doesn't work, and kind of using that data, not just for those current patients, but for future patients as well. So really kind of making a therapist smarter about the way they prescribe different therapies for their patients. And this is a startup that just raised $9 million here in Chicago. So, hey, you know, the deal flow is not totally dead, right? There are startups that are getting funded, that are making deals. And we talked, you know, often about, you know, how really, you know, the venture funding landscape is just way down compared to what it has been. But, you know, like we've also mentioned, how experts have told us, good companies are still getting funded. And I think Blueprint is a great example of that.
It's not a little AIE, is it? I mean,
no, you know, it's not.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's not an AI startup, but they actually are expecting to include kind of an AI layer into their platform. You're sort of hearing that from a lot of companies right now, but I think that it's true, especially with a software company providing data back to therapists. I think that they believe that they can put a layer of AI that just continues to better automate and make the software smarter. So, more to come on that. But they did say in their interview, the company says they do plan to include an AI layer in their software.
What is Portal Innovations? What's the story here?
Yeah, Portal Innovations. This is a really interesting effort that started a few years back here in Chicago, led by John Flavin, a big biotech guy here in town, really an influential startup leader in the city. And he created Portal Innovations. It's really a way to boost Chicago's biotech scene. So he brought not just funding for biotech startups, but also lab space. So launched a bunch of lab space in Chicago, really to give Chicago startups the space to create those biotech innovations. Chicago really lagged available space compared to other cities of its size. And so what Portal Innovations was able to do was kind of really create this space for Chicago startups to build their important biotech innovations and get funding as well. And so Portal Innovations has taken that model on the road. So they've expanded to a couple cities. One was Boston. Boston, kind of a logical place to expand, right? There's a ton of biotech innovation there, and Portal Innovations, you know, really finding itself around a lot of other good biotech innovators. But the most recent news is they expanded to Houston, which I thought was really interesting. So Flavin brought this Portal Innovations model to Houston as well, where they're going to launch a bunch of new buildings, more lab space for biotech founders, and be able to back them with funding as well. And so interesting, right? Because Houston, kind of an under the radar biotech city, very similar to Chicago, but mm-hmm. Portal Innovations believes that with the right infrastructure in place, the right funding in place, that can really get those founders off the ground.
Speaking of the biomedical space, what about Augmedix? Is that a Chicago-based company?
That's right. So Augmedix just raised a real whopping $83 million funding round the other week. Interesting medical technology startup here in the city. They have, they're bringing augmented reality to help doctors visualize a patient's spinal anatomy during a spinal surgery, just giving them better insights into the surgery as it's happening in real time. Super fascinating stuff. And, we talked to the founder, who really kind of explained what we've seen a lot in the data around funding. This founder has been, launched six startups over the last 17 years and said this was the toughest market he's ever fundraised in. Just really, really difficult to get capital. A lot of capital sitting on the sidelines. So, the big story kind of at the end of 2022 was, hey, lots of startups are having a hard time getting funded. But, hey, investors actually have lots of dry powder. There's a lot of capital available. But what we're hearing from founders, and Augmedix kind of backed this up, this capital is just on the sidelines right now. They're holding off, they're waiting, or they're investing it into their current portfolio, who might be struggling. So their current startup investments are sort of getting that priority funding. So it's really interesting, right? Because Augmedix kind of comes out of here and raises an $83 million Series D round. They also say that they're not exactly running for the IPO exits. As we know, the IPO window kind of not exactly open right now. So they're going to wait probably 18, 24 months before they kind of aim for that next round of funding.
Based in Arlington Heights, right?
That's right, Arlington Heights. That's right.
How about that? Fascinating. I want to talk more about that another day. I'm out of time this time, but it's always good to hear your voice. Jim, thanks for helping us out.
Thanks, John.
Jim Dahlke, national editor at American Inno. Let's make it into the WGN Radio Newsroom. We've got more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Rivian Automotive is coming off its best week since late 2021, and shares rose 48%. The company produces electric pickups, SUVs, and delivery vans and has a production facility in downstate Normal. The company reported better quarterly production than expected, including the shipment of hundreds of vehicles to Europe. Rivian still has a ways to go to catch up with Tesla, which built 34 vehicles for every one that Rivian built last quarter. The downtown Chicago office vacancy rate is getting worse. At the midpoint of the year, the office vacancy rate covering the Central Business District climbed nearly 23%. That's according to data from real estate services firm CBRE, reported by Cranes. The rate hit a new record high in 9 of the past 11 quarters. Companies have been shedding office space as more workers do their jobs remotely. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, and now let's update you on the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Thank you. Yeah, the business of food and the business of art are intersecting today with Chicago's very own Potbellies, Anthony Bourdain, and Ted Lasso.
Knock-a-doodle-doo.
Sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, let's begin with Potbellies. In what year?
I started there in 2006.
That's Meg Knappenberger, who was in charge of all of Potbellies' art design.
The menus and marketing and signage.
After Potbellies, she started her own company focused on designing restaurant art.
I loved it.
But another love came calling, and she and her new husband decided on Kansas City as the place to raise a family and continue her art business, which is now all about portraits and still life with a very unique style.
A mix between really abstract and recognizable work.
Kind of a distressed look, very colorful, a lot of texture. And a painting of the late Anthony Bourdain was a big seller recently on his birthday. Bourdain Day, as a couple of his friends call it.
His friends, Eric Repair and Jose Andres, started a scholarship at the Culinary Institute in his name.
Her Bourdain portrait has raised a few thousand dollars for the scholarship fund. It has a punk rock edge to it, something he was into in the 70s in New York.
So the colors are very kind of like acid and neon, black dripping ink.
She's also done big sellers commemorating the Super Bowl wins of the Chiefs and the Hoops Championship of KU, her alma mater, all three containing confetti from celebrations.
I started using confetti with the first Super Bowl win, and then it kind of caught on.
Oh, and Ted Lasso?
I brought you a little something.
Where does he fit in?
I think it's a good thing.
Jason Sudeikis appears every year at a Kansas City charity event, and this year the charity asked if she would donate a painting.
And because of the popularity of Ted Lasso, I created a portrait of him.
And then the charity asked if it would be okay for Jason to sign it for the auction?
Of course I said yes.
How did that go?
It was surreal. He's very nice guy.
Meg Knappenberger.
My website is megmakesart.com. It's M-E-G-H.
On the food calendar. If you like pina colada. It's National Pina Colada Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
We're downtown Chicago, 303 East Wacker. I'm overlooking the beautiful blue skies of Chicago, Lake Michigan, and the Chicago River. And just down the river from me is the Wrigley Building. And there's a pop-up there now that has opened up. And it features independent Ukrainian retailers. How about that? Yevgeny Droba joins us now, Deputy Consul General of the Ukraine in Chicago. Yevgeny, this is John Williams. Welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Hi, everyone. Thank you for inviting us today, and we're excited to share you about what you just mentioned, the very first of a kind Ukrainian cultural showcase supported by the City of Chicago and World Business Chicago.
It's open seven days a week, I understand, from 11 to 7. I want to make sure I get that out there. Every day of the week, huh?
Yes, every day of the week, 7 days a week, 11 to 7. 410 North Michigan Avenue, right on the first floor of the historic Wrigley Building and the Northern Tower. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Taste, shop, explore, learn. It's all about that.
I know there's food there. What kind of crafts? I understand they're made in Ukraine or handmade in Ukraine crafts?
So basically everything that you have in this store, in this space, in the cultural showcase is 99% is made by Ukrainians or in Ukraine. 95% is handmade. in Ukraine. And we also, when it comes to fresh food, we have multiple businesses represented in this space, local Chicago-based businesses. And one of them is Chocolat Cafe from Ukrainian Village. So we serve delicious Ukrainian treats 7 days a week.
Can you give me an example of some of the items I would buy besides the food? What do they sell there?
So if you come for gift shopping, and I would encourage everyone to do so, we have everything from clothes, decor, art, actually the first and the best Ukrainian watches made with Swiss mechanism. So everything that you would like to bring as a present to the wedding, wedding, Christmas, or the birthday, you can definitely come here. And by coming here, you're not just supporting the local Ukrainian Chicago businesses, but the businesses decided to support the humanitarian cause and to donate part of proceeds to the rebuilding of the hospital in eastern Ukraine that was damaged by the Russian missile attack.
410 North Michigan Avenue. This is in the North Tower of the Wrigley Building. Yeah, the Wrigley Building, you'll find it. 11 to 7 through October 13th. I'm so happy to hear about this. I will definitely be there soon. And I'm glad that a part of the proceeds go to help the people in Ukraine per se. Where are you from, Jenny? Where is home for you?
I'm originally from the northern part of Ukraine. It's easier to understand if I say Chernobyl. So that is Chernobyl area. I've been in Chicago for 2 years, and Chicago was so far a pleasant, a great city to be that welcomed me well. And by this project, we're also trying to give back to Chicago from the Ukrainian community to share our how hospital we are. So everyone is welcome to. We have the amazing people who are working here to give you a tour around the space provide you with a Ukrainian treat, some for sample, some for sale. It's also kid friendly because we have some of interactive tables that they can play with while you're walking around. So yeah, welcome to see Ukraine.
You have family there, I presume. How are they doing?
That's true. Everybody is here. Is there? It's only me here, and everybody's alive. So that is, I think, the only best way to say how they are. They're not well. They are thriving. They're resilient. They're alive. And everybody and every single member of my family and all Ukrainians in Ukraine and in Chicago, they're doing everything they can to bring the victory closer.
You know, I don't know that you have an answer to this, but I think about it now and again. In fact, I was looking at the destruction of some of the cities in Ukraine, and I thought, what happens to the people whose homes or businesses those are? Is there insurance? Will they ever get those assets back? Will they ever be compensated for what they've lost? If missiles blew up my home or my business, I would have nothing except for the money I had in the bank, maybe, such as it is. What happens to people whose homes are destroyed?
Yeah, so that's a very good question, complicated, because even though we had Russia as a neighbor, an unfortunate neighbor for many years, and we were we thought that Russia would invade and do that and start that full-scale war, but we didn't, I believe we and the society and the international community didn't want to believe. So in terms of insurance, unfortunately, the insurance policy in Ukraine was not as developed, for example, like hurricane or tornado or something like that, because we don't have those kinds of natural catastrophes in Ukraine, that much of them as you have in the United States. And we're not talking about the missile attack, right? It's something that you don't when you're signing for for the insurance, you're like, oh, are you the one to insure from the missile attack? Like, oh no, thank you, extra $200. But so that is the case, and but the government is doing everything it's possible and beyond to first to all those people who lost their homes to find their temporary homes in other parts of Ukraine, some of them also are finding a temporary home in Europe, like Poland, and some of them in the United States. The majority of the recent polls said that 87% are eager to return home as soon as possible. So, and the government does everything to that. So they're building the model homes, so temporary housing, as well as every single, for example, my parents, they were under occupation for the first 2 months of this invasion. And there are many houses in the village where they were destroyed or damaged. So what they've been doing, they've been helping other people in the village. Fortunately, our house was survived without damage. So they helped you document there is a procedure, mm-hmm. where you document the damage, then you submit it to the government agency that was specifically is responsible for doing this. So the government is helping to fix if it's something damaged, or rebuild if it's totally destroyed. It's, of course, unfortunately, it's not the perspective of the nearest of the closest future because it's economically is very intense. It's hard to cover all the needs that are coming from the inside, outside, and from the front lines.
Sure.
But the destinies of those families in need are different. Are of the priority to the government and non-profit organizations. Even in Chicago, there are organizations that raise in Ukrainian, Ukrainian-American organizations.
I'm thinking now about what's happening at the Wrigley Building. So we need to close this conversation now. You have Jenny, but I'll just remind our listeners, in the Wrigley Building, there's a pop-up cultural showcase featuring Ukrainian arts and products and food. It's by Ukrainians here or Ukrainians there, and proceeds in part go to help the people in Ukraine. It's going to be there until October, and it's open 7 days a week in the Wrigley Building from 11 to 7. Yeah, Jenny, my best to you, your family, and your people. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for support. Thank you for standing with Ukraine.
Deputy Consul General for Ukraine in Chicago.